Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the second half of our show this evening on the darkness on the edge of town. Before we went to break, we had an interesting conversation going with Maria Simpson, who is the... She was friends with Mark David Chapman in the early 70s, prior to the murder of John Lennon, and he was a big part of their family. And I left you with a question before we left that, do you feel that, Maria, perhaps Mark David Chapman had maybe not such good ideas for you and your family?
It never occurred to me, Dave. I mean, when you mentioned that, all of a sudden, I thought, hey, maybe so. I was a bit uncomfortable with him because he was certainly not himself that night, and I wanted him to leave, but it never occurred to me that he might do us harm, because we had never seen anything but kindness in the man.
But this time it was different.
This time was different.
This time this man that the children loved and was such a light to them and such a sponsor and help to them, the children were frightened of him.
They were frightened of him, and I was very uncomfortable. But the thought of him doing physical harm never crossed my mind.
All right. Now, I was just curious if that ever had connected, because it'll also tie in a little bit later in the story to something that I think is interesting. Now, had he, you said that there was really no connection for him that your house was haunted. There was
None
no
at all.
Connection that anything evil had happened in your home.
No.
But yet he was drawn back to you on numerous occasions.
Yes.
Now, you had not, okay, he came back for the one visit. How often did you see him again between then and the death of John Lennon?
I didn't see him at all.
Had you heard from him again?
No, not anything.
Okay.
We did hear our neighbor next door told us that about the time of Lennon's death, he came and sat in our swing in the backyard all day. And we had moved by then.
And that's what I was just referring to. Now, let me cross that again. He came when back to your home?
About the time he went to New York. He obviously had come from Hawaii, and he came back to our home, and the swing was still there. And he sat in the swing for such a long time. And I've always wondered, if I had been home, would I have been able to have prevented this?
One of the things I'll interject in this, Dave, I think what you're asking is kind of like a time frame. One of the things I will tell you is that the murder actually occurred in December. And in October, Mark went to a gun shop in Honolulu and bought the .38 that he used to kill John Lennon. And quite ironically, the man who sold him the gun at the gun shop's last name was Ono. That's a really weird little connection there. And he boarded a plane for New York just a few days later. But when he arrived in New York, scouting out the Dakota with his evil intent in mind, he found out that he didn't have bullets for the gun, couldn't buy them in New York. So that's when he boarded a plane for Atlanta, sought out a friend who worked as a sheriff's deputy, got the bullets from the sheriff's deputy on the ruse of using them to protect himself. And that was at the time in October, late October or the beginning of November of 1980, that he showed up at the Simpsons' old house, and one of the neighbors reported to Maria that she had seen him for an extended period of time actually sitting in the swing in the backyard at the old house.
Well, was there a new family living there, Maria?
No, not at that time.
So it was just an abandoned house. Did the neighbor notice, was he talking to anybody or staring intently inside the house? What?
They didn't mention anything other than he was just sitting in the swing, and they knew him. They had seen him over there before.
But they didn't approach him to ask him what he was doing there or why he was there?
No, they didn't.
And he was aware that you were gone?
Well, obviously he was. I mean, he had been told, certainly. But I don't know what was going through his mind at that time.
So Mark David Chapman, it's now December 8th. He is, he's shown up. He's actually bumped into John Lennon earlier in the day and gotten an autograph from him. There's a photograph of Mark David Chapman standing there after he got an autograph from John Lennon. Right?
That's correct.
Correct on this trip? So he's stalking him kind of methodically. Do you think at this point he's trying to get the guts up, or is he waiting for the right moment?
Actually, from what he said in an interview, in a previous interview, was that when John Lennon and Yoko Ono walked out of the house early in the day, around 4 o'clock that John and Yoko walked out of the building where they lived, and Chapman handed John Lennon the copy of Double Fantasy to sign, and Lennon asked him twice, "Is that all you want?" Now, that kind of sounds a little precognitive to me, for Lennon to just ask this man twice, "Is that all you want?" Did he somehow feel that was kind of more than a fan seeking an autograph? And according to what Mark said, the good voices in his head kept telling him, "Go away, just take your album and leave, your autographed album and leave, just go away, go away." But according to him, the voices that were negative inside his head said, "No, stay and finish the job."
Okay, so let me ask you this, and this is where it starts getting kind of woogie for me, all right? So now he's met with John Lennon, and I from what I've read online as well and read in some articles, Lennon also introduced him to Sean, didn't he, during that brief meeting, or was it a different meeting? Are you familiar with that at all?
I don't know if it was this meeting or an earlier meeting.
Okay. I also thought what was really intriguing, you touched on with John Lennon saying twice to him, "Is that all?" John Lennon, you know, they point to the fact that John was pretty obsessed with his own death and believing that it would be a quick, untimely death when it came.
Right.
For those of you that saw the movie Imagine, we were looking for the video clip or the audio clip to play this evening. There's a scene when he's doing his famous bed in or sleep in. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, Chip, but he's reading letters. And one of the letters comes from somebody that claims to have had a psychic premonition that he would be shot to death.
I do remember that.
Right. So, I mean, you know, there does seem to be some kind of precognition going on for John Lennon from an earlier time. So, I mean, that in itself is pretty interesting. Now, we start talking about these thoughts in his head. Now, at what point does Mark David Chapman start to blame it on a possession?
I think I can answer that for you. He said in previous interviews, again, not, of course, we did not personally interview Mark for the article that I wrote, but information that I gathered from previous interviews that he had done, he says that when John and Yoko returned to the Dakota, their apartment building, got out of the limousine and started to walk toward the buildings, his exact words were, "The demons inside his head began screaming over and over, 'Do it, do it, do it,' and that's when he pulled a gun and took the stance and fired the bullets into Lennon." Now, I think the answer to your question is this. In his initial police interviews that he was subdued without incident, the police actually took him into custody, and during his initial interviews with the police shortly after his arrest, that was the time when he actually told them that two demons that he encountered in the Simpson home commanded him to kill John Lennon.
Okay, so that's where the tie comes in. Now, he claims that the demons were part of her home to begin with.
Actually, what he told the police, and Maria can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, when they said, "Is there anyone you want us to contact for you?" I believe, again, she can say yes or no, that he said to them, contact Maria Simpson. She knows me better than anyone. Is that correct, Maria?
That's correct. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And then later, when he was asked evidently why he did this, that was when he said that these two demonic entities, I guess he called them demons, and he named them that he encountered in her house, in the Simpson house, told him to kill Lennon.
Now, let's not say the names at this point, but he gives two names. They told him what their names were. Was this while they were in him or after they expelled themselves from him?
I will tell you that what I was told and what I have heard, and again, Maria can correct me if I'm wrong, he said two demons named, and he named the two demons, told him to commit the murder.
Okay. Well, now,
so evidently, at this point in time, I don't know if he was claiming that he was possessed. I don't know that he ever was possessed or at that point in time if he was possessed or was just oppressed. I don't know. I don't know the technicality there.
Now, on the line with us, we do have demonologist, psychologist, and paranormal investigator Adam Bly. Before I bring Adam on, though, after hearing your interview where you named the two demons, and the reason that we're being reluctant, and I'll ask Adam about this again to mention the names, after the two were named on the radio show that I heard you interviewed on, and that I heard somebody had contacted the host of that show claiming that the two demons that were listed were in fact from the book, The Satanic Bible. So I contacted the Church of Satan to see if they had any connection to these characters and if they could give me any background on the two characters, on the two demons, I should say. And I was issued a quick report back from them. Claiming, Dear Mr. Schrader, there are no demons listed in the Satanic Bible. Simply, it contains pagan deities who were later called devils by Christians. We do not believe in possession and consider it a psychological illness, an attempt at getting attention or an excuse for ill behavior. They wanted nothing to do with the show or dealing with Mark David Chapman at all, and that they promised me that he had no connections with the Church of Satan whatsoever, never has and never will. Now, with that said, I'd like to bring onto the show with us, if it's fine with you two, demonologist Adam Bly, because I want to get a little bit of insight. Now, Adam, you've been listening to the show. With a lot of the explanation that was going on with Mark David Chapman, with speaking with the little people in the walls, with the delusions that he was having and feeling that he was kind of the lord and master of these little people that lived in his walls well into his teen years, and the great change that seemed to take over him for the year he was gone in Hawaii, and the fact that this family that he seemed to care so much about, he never responded to letters from the mother, Maria, never contacted the children, and then showed up and was so agitated by the fact that there were other children at the site when he got there, and then was also seen in the swing behind her home shortly after, and then is referred to the good voices and bad voices. First of all, do you believe that is a ripe case for what possession might actually be?
Dave, there's a number of things about that story that don't fit my understanding of possession. And also, part of my background, I worked in forensic psychology in the state prison system for 2.5 years, and I've had many clients who had voices tell them to kill people and, you know, done therapy with them for years and gotten to know them intimately. So there's a number of things about that fit psychosis from the sound of it and do not fit possession. I would ask, though, how old was he when he went away and had this change in personality? Does anybody know?
I can barely hear.
Maria, yeah, I
can't.
Yeah, what is the approximate age of Mark David Chapman when he left to go to Hawaii and this big change, this dramatic change took over?
I would have to say when he went to Hawaii, he left in 1977, so he was in his early 20s.
So he was in his early 20s when he left. So maybe 22, 23, and he came back around 23, 24 in that time frame, correct?
He actually was there until just before he killed Lennon, so he was about 24, 25 when he came back from Hawaii.
Okay, so he was in his early 20s, and then he came back from Hawaii to assassinate John Lennon, and he was probably about 25 at that point. Okay.
Right.
Well, and the reason I ask that is because with schizophrenia, which is one possible hypothesis, you can be kind of weird, have delusions, have some hallucinations, and then often in the latter 20s, though it can be earlier, you'll have a full psychotic break where you'll have a dramatic change in the person. They become much more delusional, much more psychotic, and their behavior gets more aberrant. So it could be that at that time that he went away, it was just at that point in the progression of the disease that he became fully psychotic, and that's why that change took place.
So most of the times the full-on psychosis starts to break in the 20s?
Usually later 20s, early
30s. Later 20s, early 30s, okay.
But it can happen earlier if the person's under stress, and in some cases it just happens earlier.
Well, let me ask you this, Adam. So many of the talks that we've heard, for those of you that aren't familiar with Adam Bly, he comes to quite a few of our events, and he's a speaker, invited speaker, probably one of the more popular speakers we have at the events talking about demonology. One of the things that you've mentioned in there is that a lot of times that the beginning of oppression, I believe you call it, is when they start to give you those little flashes, those moments of, let's kill him, let's do this. And you hear that voice or you see that flash of you shooting John Lennon. Could that have been setting the stage for a possession? Or how do we differentiate in the psychology of it being a mental break and the beginning of possession?
Well, generally, we often see both psychological problems and possession at the same time. The big thing that doesn't fit in the case that you've described here is that there was good voices and bad voices. In the case of oppression or possession, the person will describe, you know, I'm in here, Adam is still alive, but there's these other things in here too, and those other things do not take on good and bad characteristics, they're always bad. And so when I hear somebody say I've got good voices and bad voices, to me that sounds much more like psychosis as opposed to a spiritual problem.
Or perhaps, you immediately think of the little Tom and Jerry cartoons with the little devil cat on one shoulder and the angel cat on the other, trying to win over the war of what to do. Could that be more of him just attaching a psychosis to something like that and trying to, you know, give away the reasoning that he did something so heinous?
Yeah, and it could be that he, you know, it sounds like he was mentally disturbed his whole life, period, in some form.
Mm-hmm.
And after the stress and strain of murdering somebody, you know, that would drive any of us a little bit crazy, especially if we, you know, murdered somebody that presumably we had some good feelings towards or we saw that they had done some interesting things in the world and we take out this major figure, that would cause a lot of stress and strain. So you have somebody who's already mentally ill under that strain trying to make sense of it all.
Well, Maria, let me ask real quick, Maria, too, at this point, because Adam brings up a good point with the fact that he seemed to have such good feelings for John Lennon. When you first got the news that Mark David Chapman assassinated John Lennon, did you put two and two together that this was the Mark David Chapman that you knew and loved so much?
Not at first.
Okay. Not until they started showing his pictures and...
That's right. Not until I saw it on TV and I saw his picture. I thought it was just, you know, a fairly common name and it couldn't be the same one.
Now, do you believe, with as much as this man loved John Lennon and the Beatles, do you still have trouble rectifying in your head why he would go ahead and kill John Lennon?
Yes, I do. But I truly believe that what happened in Hawaii when I was not able to reach him is what was the turning point for him, and he had started planning coming back to kill him.
Okay. Now, let's cover real quickly, Adam, here. The idea behind the two names that have been given, it's a good idea not to speak the names of demons out, correct? And can you tell the audience why that is?
Well, in this context, there's two reasons. One, you don't want to give recognition, which is basically a term of, you know, invoking the name of spirits or demons because you're basically calling them either to yourself or to the location that you're in, and we don't want to be saying those over the airwaves. But two, more importantly, undoubtedly there's some listeners tonight who are interested in demons, might have some misguided ideas about them, and if they heard the names of particular demons, might then go and try to conjure those demons or use those names in rituals, which, if they were real demon names, could lead to them getting hurt.
Now, I did do some heady research on the two names, Chip and Maria, and we were unable to find, the only references I could find were in Japanese or Russian literature that had anything to do with the name demon and the demonic name that was given. And unfortunately, I couldn't translate the pages to understand what it was, and it may have just been a you know, a text error that I wasn't even picking up the real connection of those two words. But from the demonologists we've spoken to, there is no mention of those. Now, Adam, let me ask you this. The demons claimed to have told him who they were. What's your thought on that, of demons giving up that information?
There, as far as I know, a demon would never give up its real name to somebody because that gives you power over the demon to an extent. Certainly as humans, we don't have any power over demons. But let's say you were in a proper religious exercise of trying to expel a demon. If you had its name, you would have a much greater chance of expelling it. And so a demon will never give up that power to others except under extreme duress. What they do commonly do is give a fake name or claim to be some very mythic, powerful named demon from the Old Testament to sound very important. But they would almost never give their real name. They would give a trickster name.
Well, let me ask you this, Adam. Are people that have mentally unbalanced lives, are they a little bit more susceptible to something like an oppression or possession?
That I don't know, because we don't know enough about the way God decides who's going to be allowed to be oppressed and who isn't, and how much culpability somebody who's mentally ill has over their choices. You know, if somebody's got serious mental illness and they choose to invite a demon into their life, does God allow the demon to enter their life, given the person was a little bit crazy and wasn't thinking correctly? I don't know the answer to that. I would say in my experience that a lot of people with serious mental illness can look like they're having supernatural problems and spiritual problems.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Adam, for joining us on The Darkness here, and thank you for sharing your insights. For those of you that are tuning in, you're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Sharing the time with us the last few minutes was Adam Bly. He's a demonologist and a psychologist and a paranormal investigator. And our guests for the evening are Chip Coffey, who's the author of an article in the new Haunted Times issue about the death of John Lennon and the possible possession of John Lennon's murderer, Mark David Chapman. We're also speaking with Maria Simpson, who is a close friend of Mark David Chapman and was one of the few people that Mark wanted to speak to after the death. We're going to be back with more right after this.
It will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
I gotta pay.
Just don't get any on the floor. Hurry back. There is more to come from The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
For 58 years, Fate has consistently supplied its loyal readership with a broad array of true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life, and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, archaeological hotspots, alternative science, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730. Or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. Or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness Monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
Two ghosts walk into a bar and see another ghost at the bar point at them and yell, "Boo!" One of the ghosts yells back, "Boo-hoo!" And the ghost at the bar yells back, "Well, you don't have to cry about it." Ah, hell, you try writing this.
You magnificent bastard! I salute you!
Welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Good evening and welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our topic tonight is the death of John Lennon and the possible possession of Mark David Chapman in this murder. Chip, now it's interesting, you know. Maria?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Did we lose you there? All of a sudden we caught you laughing. I don't know what's going on here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Chip and I were chatting.
We were talking during the break.
Good deal. The reason I wanted to bring a demonologist in is because of the different things that were popped up with giving out names and such like that, and I wanted to see, you know, try to shed some light on if, in fact, demons were in him, would they have given real names? And as we heard from that, most times they don't give that because it's too easy to expel a demon at that point. Now, I'm curious, do you know Chip or Maria possibly at all with his obsession? I mean, you know, there was also another very famous person that's out there, stalker, murderer, who was very obsessed with the Beatles. And do you know, did Mark David Chapman have any connection at all to the Manson family?
Not as far as I know.
No, nor I.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious if that would have played into effect at all as well.
One of the things is that he idolized John Lennon. It was, again, the whole dichotomy of things with Mark. He loved John Lennon, but he was very resentful of the fact that Lennon was becoming a multimillionaire by doing the things that he did. With saying he was a strong proponent of peace and love, and yet he was becoming rich. So Mark resented that fact that Lennon was, on one hand, his hero, and on the other hand, betraying in some way the people by becoming rich in his work.
Okay. So he felt... Now, I remember at the time that this came out, one of the things that they talked about was the possibility that he felt he was John Lennon.
He actually signed his name the last time that he signed out of work in Hawaii.
Right.
He signed out, when he signed his time card, he signed John Lennon and then scratched through it.
Okay. So do you, when you talk to him, Maria, now he, at this point, he's assassinated an icon in American and in English, right, popularity. Did the police contact you when they said, oh, you should talk to Maria Simpson, she knows me better than anyone?
They did call me, yes.
And what was it that they were hoping to glean from you at that point?
Just about vaguely what you have mentioned tonight, what kind of appearance and how was he acting the last time I saw him, which had been quite a while.
Right.
And did I have any idea that he was planning this ghastly deed, but I didn't know. I didn't know. And that was really pretty much all that they wanted to know.
Now, did you find it strange that after all these years of not speaking with you, that you would be the first person he would send the police to kind of attest to his character?
Oh, yes. I've thought that many times because he had two very close friends as well as his parents. That I would have thought he would have given them their names, but when he was with me, I saw just one side of him. I saw the kind, gentle.
Well, I wonder if maybe that's why he was sending them to you.
That's right.
So that, because you were the last one to know him in the kind, loving, gentle person that he was.
Exactly.
Now he just dropped the gun and just stood there waiting. Right when the police approached him, he just said, "I'm unarmed. Please don't hurt me." And he was just taken into custody very simply.
That's right. It's amazing that that he had signed his name, John Lennon. That's really kind. I remember now reading that, but I hadn't thought of that before. Had he lost his own personality and taken on Lennon's and? Did he think he was killing someone else at the time? I don't know what he was thinking then, what was going through his mind. Very strange behavior.
Did you, when, now you've spoken to him since his arrest, correct?
Yes.
How many times have you spoken to him?
Twice.
Okay. Now, have you exchanged letters at all or contact with him in that form?
Not up until this time, no.
Okay. When you contacted him, or when he talked to you, I take it he was in prison at that point, what did he want to talk to you about? Did he reach out to you, or did you reach out to him?
He reached out to me because he called when my children had the same birthday, and he called 2 years on their birthday and chatted about how they were doing and just what you would expect from anyone else. I know they're growing up. How old are they now? And that sort of talk. But from what I understood, that he is very lucid sometimes, and then he's not at others.
Now, when you got this call, did you think it was strange to be hearing from him again? reaching out to you? And was when you made this call back to you, did it seem like he was Mark again? He was Nemo.
It seemed like he was Nemo again. And so much of the connection that we had was our mutual love of the children. So it didn't surprise me much that he would pick that day to get back in touch.
One of the interesting things, if I can jump in here again, you ask if he sounded like Nemo at that point. Mark, lots of people have asked, two things I want to put in here is that lots of people have said, well, maybe Mark claimed this so that he could get a not guilty by reason of insanity defense plea.
Right.
And originally, that is exactly what the plea was, not guilty by reason of insanity. He was examined by many psychiatrists who claimed that he was definitely delusional, but the consensus of opinion was that he was competent enough to stand trial. But 2 weeks before the trial was scheduled to start, against his attorney's advice, Mark changed his plea from not guilty by reason of insanity to guilty. So that would sort of...
Now, did you say he did that on his own accord, or did he do that with the advice of the attorney? I'm sorry.
He did that totally against his attorney's advice.
Okay.
One version of why he did this was, there are conflicting reports as to why he made this decision. One says that he did it because God wants me to do it, and another version says that he said the little voices inside my head told me to plead guilty.
Okay.
So beyond that, fast forward a bit to he's in Attica prison where he's been convicted and given a life sentence because there was no death penalty in New York at the time, and I don't believe there still is. He says that shortly after he was incarcerated at Attica Correctional Institute near Buffalo, that he had a spontaneous sort of exorcism that overcame him in which the Holy Spirit came down, advised him that there were demons in him, and he said, in Jesus' name, for them all to come out of him, and that several demons came out of his mouth. And in the article, it gives a rather graphic recount of how he describes that exorcism that happened to him at Attica.
Now, Chip, as you're starting to research this and write this article, and with the heaviness of what it is and the possibility that there's demonic involvement, did that bring fear into your life for opening up some kind of Pandora's box?
Absolutely it did.
Okay. Maria, knowing what you know now about Mark David Chapman and about these things that occurred, what is your thought? Do you believe that he's just a mentally sick person, or do you believe that he is, in fact, he was possessed at the time?
If we had not experienced anything outside of him in the house, then I would think that he was possibly just psychotic. But I experienced things on my own, and that's the moving of the objects. The one night, a banging around our house, it sounded as if someone had a sledgehammer and walked around the house, beating on the house. Things such as that, that I'm more inclined to think that there was an evil entity or two in the house.
Are you afraid opening yourself up again here 26, 27 years later to these conversations and the life that you've escaped with that type of evil entity or evil malevolent force that was going on around you? Are you afraid of reopening those wounds again?
Not really.
Okay.
You know, because I have such a positive life, and I believe that, you know, positive attracts positive and negative attracts negative.
That's correct. How about your daughter? Is she still having any type of effect, or has her children or you know, perhaps your son's children felt any strange effects from any of the, you know, has anybody exhibited similar behavior to what happened to your daughter in those years?
My daughter has pretty much tried to put it out of her mind.
Okay.
She doesn't like... Oh, I just thought of something I want to tell you, Dave.
Please.
During the time that she was going through this horror, I had a psychic come to the house. This was way into the into the whole thing, because I finally just decided, you know, we need to get something or someone in here rather than just a doctor. And he came to the house. And I just lost my train of thought. what the heck was I about to say, Jim?
You were going to tell us where all your money was.
You were going to say something about Kathy and something she experienced during that time period.
Well, I'll think about it in a minute, but right now it's gone. It was something important, too.
Well, then it'll come back to us. Yeah, so as we were talking about the fact that, you know, I had wanted to know if she felt that anything is still bothering her, or has anything tried to bother her children here in the future. You said she's just tried to put it out of her mind and doesn't deal with any of that. So do you believe that nothing has followed you from that home in Georgia?
I have always had the ability to see dead people from the time I was small. And I still, of course, do that. But she also can sense paranormal, but it has nothing to do with that house.
How are you not seeing the old man in the house, then? I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I mean, how, Chip, do you understand why some people would be able to see him and others wouldn't if they had this ability?
I know that there have been times when I've actually seen an apparition, and some people have that are around, and other sensitives that have been there have not been able to see what we saw. There, you know, if I see it or multiple people see it and then others don't, I don't know. I don't have any rational explanation for that other than the fact that if there was some sort of oppression going on, maybe it was there solely for the child.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense.
One thing that we can add on to this, and perhaps, you know, the most compelling part of the story that we stress on this topic is, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there, even those people that are in the paranormal, that are saying, okay, what's so compelling about this story? The most compelling part of this is that Mark claimed that two entities that he encountered in this house told him to kill John Lennon, yet he had no knowledge whatsoever about what was going on in this house. So my question becomes, and I think the most compelling question is, if he didn't know what was going on in this house, why on earth or how on earth would he say that he encountered these entities in the house?
Right.
That's the most unexplainable part.
Well, that's why I brought that up earlier, saying that this house seemed to have an attraction to him. And even though he didn't seem to be on the inside track or let on that he was in the inside track with Maria and her family, and nothing seemed to happen, maybe the reason things weren't happening to your family at that time, Maria, when Mark was there, is maybe they were talking to Mark.
That's a possibility.
And that could have been the, I mean, what do you think on something like that, Chip? Would you pick something up on that perhaps maybe that, you know, was more of the reason, not so much religious protection, but maybe the fact that the entity was too busy screwing around with Mark David Chapman to mess with her daughter?
I think it's a great possibility, and we brought up something you very adroitly brought up something in your question, and that is, why did he come back to the house when he came back to get the bullets? Why did he go to that house and sit in the backyard when he knew that the Simpson family had already left that house, that it was a vacant home, and yet he came back and sat for an extended period of time in the swing, in the yard, almost as though he were drawn back to that house, if you will? Did something draw him back to that house? Why did he spend that time in the yard?
Or could it have been something as simple as melancholy of returning to a place when his life was innocent and a little bit more fun and pure, and he felt a sense of love and family and connection? And maybe he was fighting through whatever this quote-unquote demon was in his mind before he made this decision to change and alter the lives of so many people. I mean, that might be another way to look at it as well, is that he went back to the place where he was most comfortable. Because, again, it begs the thought that if the first person that he recommended the police talk to is Maria, there must have been some really good, strong, solid feelings for that family of love and safety that he would consider her the person to contact.
Very compelling point also. Very interesting and compelling point. What was going on in that man's mind, or what may or may not have been influencing him? You know, I don't think, neither Maria nor I is here to say that the devil made Chapman kill John Lennon. We just find it incredibly, incredibly fascinating by what he said compared with what was happening in that house. And that whole story, when woven together, certainly does make you, again, stop and think about possibilities of what can and might very well exist in the world.
Maria, before we go into our final break, I'd like to ask you a question. With the upheaval that this man has put into your life and the challenges and the things that have befallen him and your family as a result of it, have you forgiven Mark David Chapman for all of this?
Oh yes. I have to base my feelings for him on the time we spent together and assume that either these demons or a mental illness caused him to commit the crime. He's still Nemo to me.
That's a beautiful thought. We're going to take a quick break for the final time for this evening. We'll be back to wrap up with Maria Simpson and Chip Coffee. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
Don't you dare move. There's more to come from the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Use the words of Mary Thompson, there is no greater pain than the loss of a loved one. So many things you never thought you would have to do, so many decisions you never thought you would have to face. Mary describes the painful journey of losing her husband to a chronic illness in her new book, With Angels Beside Me, A Caregiver's Story. With Angels Beside Me not only takes you through Mary's struggles, but also serves as a guide to caregivers everywhere that are looking to find peace, guidance, and hope in their own situations. With Angels Beside Me, A Caregiver's Story is available right now at Amazon.com. Just search for the title on Amazon or from Mary herself. With Angels Beside Me is only $9.95 and available to ship anywhere around the world. If you know someone who's losing a loved one, or if you yourself are facing some sort of loss of a family member, be sure to read Mary Thompson's With Angels Beside Me, A Caregiver's Story. Available right now on Amazon.com.
If you read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd and the creepy. Taps Paramag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of The Ghost Hunters to the latest trends in technology in the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at TapsParamag.com.
Are you tired of reading about what couple in Hollywood is breaking up or divorcing? Have you ever wondered where you can find the news that covers the subjects that you are really interested in? I would like to invite you to visit SupernaturalNews.com. Supernatural News uses the latest internet technology to search for the topics we know you will be interested in reading. News of the latest Bigfoot, UFO, or Loch Ness Monster sightings. Read about the latest conspiracy theories and urban legends. Supernatural News, where belief and reality merge.
In the Amityville Horror, the ghost told them to get out the house. White people stayed in there. Now that's a hint and a half for your ass. A ghost say get the out, I would just tip the out the door. They walked and looked in the toilet bowl with blood in the toilet.
They said, that's peculiar.
I would have been in the house and said, oh baby, this is beautiful. We got a chandelier hanging up here, kids outside playing, it's a beautiful neighborhood. We ain't got nothing to wear. I really love them, this is really nice. Too bad we can't stay, baby.
We're the type of guys who would have stayed just for the extra company. Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town.
I had Sean, and I just knew immediately that it was very important to protect Sean.
Mm-hmm. Should Mark David Chapman be forgiven?
I know that the Pope went to the jail and visited the jail and forgave this person who was trying to assassinate him, something like that. Well, I'm not a Pope, and it's very difficult for me to forgive what happened. But I don't even want to think about the person that you mentioned now, and I usually don't, because it's so irrelevant who pulled the trigger. It was that was not what was relevant. The fact that John's gone is what we're living with.
Imagine there's no heaven.
And that was the words of John Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, as she was asked by a British reporter if there was forgiveness in her heart for Mark David Chapman. This was a. This is one of those points in your life, Chip. Don't you agree? Where, you know, I mean, people know where they were. They recollect what happened. I mean, I watched the devastation and watched my aunt cry like a child when, you know, when John Lennon was assassinated. It was like a good friend died. I was a little too young at the time to realize the impact. I mean, I was a huge Beatle fan, but it just, you know, to me, it was just somebody on TV.
I would say that it was John Lennon is. Look at today. I mean, he's still there. It's some almost three decades later, and you know, John Lennon is still such an amazing force. The Beatles changed the face of music, so their influence is still with us today. I hear, very interestingly enough, I got into the car after pumping gas at a gas station the other day and switched on the radio and heard the end of With a Little Help from My Friends. So, you know, and another whole topic is that John Lennon seems to be following me around a bit since I wrote this article. At least I'm hoping it's John and not something else.
Well, I was curious about that, too. And maybe we can ask you to do that while we wrap up here with Maria. You know, being a medium and a psychic yourself, I'm wondering if you've made any connection or if you can reach out and see if there's any message out there that would come through for him. And Maria, I'd like to know from you. As you go forward with this, I mean, you have a beautiful heart that, you know, you're able to forgive somebody that's turned your world upside down so much with the stuff that occurred. And I guess that's going to have an impact on your life and your children's life for as long as they live as well.
That's what I was going to tell you about when I forgot my train of thought.
Okay, well, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No,
but my daughter is not married. She has no children, but my son has two children. And he is, he's still very nervous about it when it comes up. He says, I don't want to talk about it. And I think he's still frightened of his sister.
Oh, really?
I really think he is, that perhaps this might happen again. And, because you can just see it in his eyes that he's never really gotten over it.
That's very curious.
It's very curious, and he also saw an old woman in the house. And he really and truly, Dave, he was terrified because he followed me so closely that if I stopped, he'd bump into me. And he'd sit on the tub while I took a bath, and he really had a hard time in some ways more than Cindy. But we did take pictures of her during one of these episodes. Now, and my husband took it because he is so skeptical. But he took it with a little Brownie camera. Do you remember Brownie cameras?
Oh, sure do, yep.
And we took a couple of pictures of her in bed, just sleeping, and then when she begins to get up and she's taking off her pajamas. And then she's on the floor on all fours like an animal. And the top part of her body is obscured by this dark shape, her head and her shoulders, and that were not explainable. I took them to Chuck Wolf at Wolf's Photo, and he didn't have any explanation. He said it wasn't because the film had not advanced properly, that he just did not know.
All right. So he didn't believe that it was just a flaw in the film or in the processing or in the advancement of the film. He just believes that it was just an unknown creation.
Just an unknown, yeah.
I apologize. I have not had a chance to grab the magazine yet, Chip. Are any of those photographs as a part of it?
No. I actually submitted a couple of things that were... Maria was kind enough to give me a photograph of her husband with Mark working in the garden, and we were a little reluctant to publish that photograph as well, although he gave us permission. But none of those pictures appear in association with the article.
You know, maybe if you're okay with it in the future here, Maria, we'd love to see the pictures, and if, you know, we'd either just look at it privately or if you're willing to share it with our listeners so they could see the photograph of this creature as well, maybe we can get some answers more on what the being might be.
Oh, that would be fine. She was so young, I don't think anyone would be able to recognize her.
One of the things that I may be able to do also is that since I'll be seeing you during the month of March, maybe what I can do is bring them with me when I see you in Colorado.
That would be excellent. And, you know, we've got an author that we work very closely with. Her name is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and she is doing research on creatures known as shadow people. And this may be something of great interest for her as well, Maria. So anything that you'd be willing to open up to us to see, and if, you know, if you'd like it just to Tim and I stick with just us seeing it, we'd certainly do that. Or if you'd allow us, we will share it possibly on our website so that people can see the photographs from the from your household and the spirit that it seemed to be attached to your daughter.
Well, I'll have to make sure it's okay with her.
I understand. Well, you just let us know, and we'd be happy to see him. And, you know, I just out of interest for myself because of the, you know, seeing the actual photographs of those type of things are always more compelling to me that then, you know, you can actually place them with something that you're talking about as well.
They are. Picture's worth a thousand words, and it really is. And this was quite shaking us up. That wasn't correct, but because we didn't expect to see anything.
Right. Did you ever record her to get the voices that were coming from her?
No, we didn't.
Now, were the voices ever not hers? Did they sound more animalistic? Did they sound more male? Did they sound...
No, it was always her voice.
Okay.
There was no one, no other voice came through.
All right.
But it was just her words that she used and the fear in her voice that really, really worried us. Well, when we took these pictures, we absolutely didn't expect to see anything. At least my husband didn't, and he really was quite shocked when he saw them.
Did that help him become a believer of this?
It helped him open up a little bit more.
All right.
Just a little bit. He says, and this is always what he always says, I don't want to look at it. I don't believe in it. I don't want to talk about it. So.
And this many years later, is he still of the same mindset?
Pretty much.
All right.
Pretty much. He occasionally will say, "What do you think really happened at the old house?" And I'll tell him.
So he does still have an interest and an intrigue. It's there, but it just is. It sounds like most men, we, you know, those things that we don't understand and we can't protect our family from, we almost would rather ignore that they were ever there or existed.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you say protect the family.
Right.
I think the fact that we were all quite upset, and Cindy more so, because her life was just changed so drastically. And he couldn't do anything about it.
And also from the standpoint that there are so many things that even that I've experienced that I find it really hard to wrap my brain around. And it really, things like this stretch your belief system so far for things that rock your world or throw you completely out of balance by what you perceive your reality to be. I mean, your whole world is actually turned upside down when these sort of things enter into your world, and it's just so hard to even fathom or bring yourself to a point of acceptance that this may be in existence.
Right, because if that if you have to admit that this is out there, that's, you know, that's crazy. I mean, how do you wrap your head around? As you and I know, Chip, we've seen things in the paranormal investigations that you want the answers, you want it, and once you see it, it leaves you at this point of holy beep, what did I just see, and how can I even begin to process what's just happened to me?
And even more so when you start dealing with anything that's dark or negative.
Right. Definitely.
I mean, it multiply that feeling with seeing a garden variety type ghost times a thousand or a million or a gazillion when it comes to dealing with anything that's a negative or a non-human entity. I mean, it really does stretch your belief system and your whole sense of reality.
Now, Maria, has the family that bought the house after you, are they still occupying that home?
They are. They're still there. I have been by several times to try to talk to them about what has happened since we moved out, but as I said, he's not willing to talk about it.
Well, Maria, and I'll ask you this and see if it would be something you'd have an interest in the future. If you would be interested in passing on the address to Tim or I, you know, we would never release where the actual house is or give any personal information, but just to contact to see what kind of research we could do on the history of the house and the property to go a little further, that maybe we can help shed some light for you in the future on what happened there and maybe who those spirits were or, you know, what that property may have been at one point that would make it understandable to you and your family what occurred, and then maybe there can be some closure.
I'll have to think about that one, Dave.
All right.
I don't want this family brought in.
Oh, no, it would not. I didn't mean in contacting them directly, but there's a way to go through town records and everything to find out the history of the home, and by researching newspapers from the eras that, you know, preceded you owning the home to see if there was any news stories, murders, deaths, suicides, any, you know, land purchase deeds that might make it a little bit more understandable. And a lot of times the older archives actually hold photographs of the families that own the property. And perhaps we can stumble upon photographs of an old man or an old woman that your family might understand who they were dealing with.
That would be very interesting.
Okay. Well, you kick it around and decide if that's something that would be a good fit for you, because we'd certainly like to do our bit to try to help you get some closure. And we wouldn't do it on the radio show unless that's something you wanted to do in the future. But then perhaps we can at least help you and your family get a little bit more understanding on what happened or what may have happened in your lives.
Very well. I'll think about it. And you have my number, and you know how to get in touch with me.
That's right, Marie. And thank you very much for spending your time with us this evening. And, Chip, before we head out, we have about a minute left here on the show. Do you get any sense from John Lennon about what's happened and with the hubbub that, you know, surrounded his death and subsequent legend that's grown from it?
Interestingly enough, everywhere I would go after I started delving into this article, there would be things Lennon around me, photographs, people wearing T-shirts, people doing projects at colleges where I would go. So it almost appeared as though he was trying to send me a signal that I really do feel from a psychic standpoint that Lennon is very much still present, and he is still a spirit for the good. And I feel like he's happy that finally somebody's bringing some sense of clarity to what's going on with this case, or opening it up again. And quite honestly, I think John Lennon's happy that he's being remembered and happy that his name is still being spoken and that there are people that still revere and idolize him.
Right.
I think maybe his ego takes over a little bit.
27 years later, and I mean, a lot of people still feel the pain as though it happened yesterday. That's an amazing impression.
He certainly changed the face of music and the face of the world.
Well, Chip, people can pick up this magazine at any newsstand right now. It's out. It's called Haunted Times Magazine, and we will have a link on our website to Haunted Times Magazine as well. Chip, thank you very much, and thank you for bringing Maria onto the show with us this evening. We also want to thank demonologist Adam Bly for joining us, and also Mr. Christopher Moon from Haunted Times Magazine. Chip and Maria, God bless, and hope you both have a safe night, and thank you for spending your time with us here.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you so much, Dave.
And for those of you that might have a concern or worry about this type of thing, Adam Bly has been kind enough to share a prayer with us that I will share with you. It's the prayer to St. Michael the Archangel. St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the divine power of God, cast into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who roam throughout the world seeking the ruin of souls. Amen. For more information on that prayer, you can look it up and Google it, Prayer to St. Michael the Archangel. I'd like to thank all of our guests for joining us here in the darkness on the edge of town this evening. We'll be back again next week with a brand new show.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.